So apparently there's a primary going on, and it has more candidates than we thought it did. Today I'm sitting down with one of them. I'm Kevin Fever. This is The Weekly. When word broke, thanks to reporting from the Puerto Rico Report, that the left wing was having their primary, I was surprised to see that there were two more candidates than I was expecting. Of course, Matthew Hale and Trash had declared their candidacies, but we also saw Dallas and Puerto Rico Governor Lena Caffey on the roster. What surprised me more was seeing that Dallas had won in Jefferson. She, for lack of a rollout, managed to gather up a coalition and really take advantage of global labor's newfound strength in the state. She was very kind to take time to sit down for an extended interview with me. I enjoyed it quite a bit. It was definitely more in-depth than a lot of the interviews I get the chance to do. I feel like I learned something from it, and I hope you will too. Without further ado, Governor Dallas. Governor Dallas, welcome to The Weekly.
Hello, thank you.
I want to start just by congratulating you on winning the governorship in Jefferson. How do you plan on working with the new libertarian majority to accomplish your goals? Another thing I want to ask, was putting forward April as first secretary play to that end?
Being perfectly honest on the April thing first, kind of. So I wouldn't say I was doing it to placate the libertarians at all. April, considering how like what April was doing with the now disgraced former governor Jared, I'd say April did a pretty good job with a governor that went crazy at the end. So I put in my EO nominating April, I put a subsection where I was literally talked about that, where I was like, I recognized April did a good job in a very bad circumstance. I think under a good governorship, April would be a really good for secretary. It just so happens I'm 99% sure the libertarians are going to confirm April, but
Sure.
I didn't do that to placate them because I was in a libertarian supermajority and I got 7 bills passed in one session alone. For context, and I mean no disrespect to Computer Guy here, he got 7 bills passed in 4 sessions of parliament. So like I think it's pretty well known the libertarians in Jefferson kind of like me. Or at least I seem to be willing to work well with them.
So you're not concerned about getting your agenda through?
No, I like my agenda is just helping Jefferson, really. The people most I want to help the people there, in Jefferson. So like the libertarians want to do the same thing. Even though I am a libertarian left, of course, the leader of the GLP, I tend to have somewhat similar policy to the libertarians. Because, like, at the end of the day, I think the Libertarian Party is more moderate than they like to think they are. At least in Jefferson, the only like real extremist I know of, a real extreme libertarian there is like Kestrel, and he's an outlier. So, like, yeah, I most of the time our policy go hand in hand.
Okay.
I mean, like, literally their UBI. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut
No,
you
you're
off, but
totally
I'm
fine.
thinking about it. The UBI they implemented in Jefferson, that's like something I would have wanted to do if it wasn't done already. And like, that's generally, I would say, a pretty big bipartisan thing. So like, I don't know, the libertarians in Jefferson seem to not really be super far right. And they're just pretty all for liberty and freedoms to the people, which like I can get with.
All right. We had a question from a listener that I'm going to ask. As you know, there's a coronavirus vaccine in the works. What's your plan for distributing that? And who's first in line? And who should be expecting to wait for a while?
So it's funny you mention that because during my run as the Health and Human Secretary in Jefferson, a disgraced Governor Jared gave me, I believe, $4.4 million, and I wrote a secretarial order that Governor Computer Guy, former Governor Computer Guy, actually finally published, where I cut that 4.4 in half to $2.2 million, and I put 2.2 towards a campaign promoting the vaccine and its safety. And I put another $2.2 million to building up infrastructure so that it could be released whenever it is ready in an efficient and timely manner. towards and as that time, I did discuss with the governor and in the White House somewhat. The people who are getting it first are going to be the communities that are having the most rampant growth of community transmissions, as in, like, they're getting it from within their own community.
Right.
So they will be the ones who are receiving it first. If your state isn't seeing that many community transmissions and it's leveling off and it seems to be fine, expect to wait a little longer, but it should not be that long of a wait with how much money I've dedicated to infrastructure and spreading it.
Mm-hmm. I suppose I understand that the infrastructure bit was out there, and I certainly appreciate within my role in the federal government making sure that this vaccine gets out. I appreciate the education work you've done to ensure that everyone who can get it will be getting it. I suppose I want to talk. I understand wanting to focus on the areas of highest transmission. Have you broken down at all your priorities as far as, like, demographic groups? So individuals in certain professions, individuals in certain risk areas, different age groups, anything like that?
Not entirely. Whenever I was the Health and Human Secretary, because the data we were getting back then wasn't the best, I think, as you certainly know. I think it matters less. Like, this virus is indiscriminatory. It doesn't matter, like, how old you are. It doesn't matter what race you are. It doesn't matter what profession you have, how much money you make. And to me, it more matters on where is it spreading the fastest. That is most important.
Well, I would certainly challenge the idea that it doesn't matter what age you are. Data is relatively...
It matters in lethality. I'd agree with that, but...
Right, so wouldn't you want to ensure that the people who are at the highest risk of dying from it are the first ones to get protected?
Sure, yes. Like, I'd agree with that. However, there needs to be a balance. Like, I don't want to give an absolute answer of, like, yes, we're going to prioritize all the older people first while there's communities being ravaged by the virus and it's spreading out of control. Okay. So I want to make sure there's a balance. And I'd have to look over everything again. I think we're still waiting on the most recent data to come out. So, like,
that's correct. We are waiting on the vaccines to start becoming more widely available.
The best answer I could give you is, of course, I'm going to make sure that the people who are most likely to be killed by the virus get it first. But I also need to prioritize the groups that have this virus spreading the quickest. So okay. I want to find balance between the two.
All right. Thanks to reporting by the Puerto Rico Report today, we learned that you are making a run at the presidency through the Coalition Left primary. What made you decide to run in November?
Well, there are multiple reasons. And really, the first one is the Speaker Hale, I don't think, is a strong candidate. And as long as the left, I was mostly decided to run. In the beginning, to spoil Hale, I'll be very upfront about that. However, as time went on, I became more and more serious about it, because it seems, especially with the result we see in the primary, more and more people actually want me to be the left candidate. Mm-hmm. And if that's what people want, I'm willing to be that person. I'm willing to be that candidate to run for president.
Do you feel prepared for the office, even though you were mostly running as a spoiler? Putting aside whether or not people want that to be you, do you personally feel like you have a 4-month agenda and the experience to really execute that job?
Do I have the experience? I'd have to say objectively, no. I haven't held that many executive offices, if I'm being perfectly honest, but I don't think that would necessarily stop me from doing a good job. That just means I'd have to surround myself with competent cabinet members and cabinet members that are actually willing to put in the work to help me and then get things done efficiently. Mm-hmm. Like, the presidency isn't just a one-person job, it is a team. So if I can assemble a good enough team who are efficient and effective in what they do, I'm sure I can do a great job.
All right.
To the first part of your question, in the beginning, I was a bit worried. Now, as I've actually, like, started the primary and I've won in Jefferson, I'm pretty confident I have this. Like, I'm pretty confident I can do this as president.
Okay. Of course, media reporting out that a secretive primary was held is not necessarily most people's idea of a flawless campaign rollout. Can you explain the decision to not publicly announce your candidacy prior to the Jefferson primary?
So, the reason I didn't do it before then, my ultimate goal was to announce it right after the first results of the primary. Because beforehand, I didn't really think, like, beforehand, I think it was more important for me to, like, really establish if I was just doing it to be a spoiler or if I was going to be serious about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I did kind of base that off of what the results would be in Jefferson, because I am not going to lie. I really didn't think the SDP would have the backbone to vote for anyone other than Hale, because I don't see why they're, like, I have talked to people privately about why they would support Hale, and in the beginning, most of them were just doing it because they thought he was the only good SDP candidate, and therefore was the only good left candidate. So, in the beginning, I was just spoiling. I was just, like, trying to make sure he didn't win, because I was not confident in a Hale presidency whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, however, as we got closer to the results of the primary, more and more people were starting to see the same vision I had of what a Hale presidency would look like, and actually, with the talks I was having with people and how my political career has been and the policy I've gotten passed and I've advocated for, I'm guessing I'm changing people's minds, which is evident. So that's where we are now. I was going to announce it right after the results, but then we got into what actually happened.
Right. And yes, I will definitely be hitting on that in just a little bit. Can you, since we did not have that big public rollout, just give us the top line of what you're doing to convince these individuals who are switching, who are switching from the SDP to support you and Jefferson. What would a Dallas presidency look like?
A Dallas presidency is just for, like, I've always run on in Jefferson. I'm by the people for the people. That's what I'm going to do as president. I want to make sure that the people have their voices heard and that they get, and whatever they want done, I can help get them done within reason. So, like, in Jefferson, Jefferson's like a libertarian haven, as everyone knows. However, if you really look at it, there's not many things protecting workers, which is why I kind of ran on in the governor race. I want to ensure, or I want to promote co-ops, worker cooperatives, because they give workers actual voices in the workplace, and they, like, it's just a net positive to workers, because a worker cooperative incentivizes a worker to work harder, and whenever workers work harder, your business does better, the economy does better. And it gives workers more say in what happens in the company, which means they can be exploited less. It is literally just a net positive. If I can do this on the federal level, which I plan to do in the House, I think that's even better. So at the end of the day, I want to make sure that the common person isn't being, like, exploited, and is making sure that their livelihoods are protected and they can live comfortably.
All right.
I want to, mostly by addressing the wealth distribution, but without, like, actually, like what a UL candidate might do, where they want to, like, tax the wealthy, like, a ridiculous percent. I want to more address why wealth distribution is the way it is, and I want to attack there rather than just taking money and giving it to the poor.
Another listener question for you. Have you put any thought toward your running mate at this stage?
Yes. Kind of.
Okay.
It's kind of how I was with the Jefferson governor. I think it really depends the closer I get, because, like, with the governor, my picks really depend on what parliament looks like, because parliament approves it. And so I'm kind of approaching my presidential picks the same way, even though no one really, I can really, like, pick whoever I want within reason, that is. I can't, like, literally just pick whoever. I want to wait, because I might have someone in mind now, and I don't want to get my heart set on them have a huge scandal and, like, feel like I'm betraying this person or I'm betraying my ideals by not picking them.
Mm-hmm.
So by just having a general idea of, like, who I think is competent and who might do a good job, I'm not getting my heart set on anything, and I won't get hung up on anything if anything happens between now and the results.
Sure. Through the left coalition primary process, does the winner of that primary have free rein to choose their running mate, or is there any kind of confirmation process throughout the members of that coalition?
I, as far as I'm aware, and I may be forgetting because I may be forgetting if the actual document says anything about that, but I'm pretty sure they just have free rein to pick whatever VP or people they want.
Okay.
Now, I wouldn't say that it's impossible that people in this left coalition are trying to strike deals with each other, because at the end of the day, the SDP and the UL don't really have the best relationship. So if I were to guess, I would definitely assume something like that might be happening. But yeah, whoever wins the primary has free rein to pick their VP.
Okay. Based on publicly available voting records and our own likely voter model, the Global Labor Party truly does have its stronghold in Jefferson, where this first primary was just held. However, only about 10% of voters nationwide identify with the GLP, and less than 5% of those in states that are not Jefferson. Now, you won the Jefferson primary, but what does your path forward look like as the primary continues into SDP territory in the north and United Left territory in Puerto Rico?
Well, I have been, I would say, a pretty big reason as to why this leftist unity even happened. Let's go all the way back to the midterm elections. I was the reason that the SDP and the UL were able to coordinate and actually, like, or, okay, I don't want to take all the credit and say I was a big reason why there was a big win. Because the left has, I think, historically always had big wins in the federal elections. However, I do want to at least take some claim to, I was out there making sure these parties talk to each other and there's some level of coordination.
Mm-hmm.
And as the GLP, we don't necessarily want to overtake these other two parties. The GLP, as I've been saying, is more focused on passing like specific legislation. Like, we have our own niche, really. And we want to keep this niche. We don't want to grow and like overtake these other parties, because then it kind of ruins why we created the party.
Mm-hmm.
However, let's say for some reason the SDP does collapse, I don't think we're afraid of filling that void. We just want to be an effective party. So, getting back to your question, sorry, that was like kind of a rant.
No, please, I gave a very long question. So
it seems people in the SDP have noticed that their party is pretty moderate, really, and that they're actually, and most of the like big members who are actually putting legislation in the House,
mm-hmm.
They're not putting like moderate or like super bipartisan bills out there. They're actually pretty farther left bills than like what we'd see. So I'm thinking those people are actually going to end up voting for me, or at least someone from the UL. I think probably not in the North. I think the politicians in the North are going to probably die on the hill that Hale is the best candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, I'd say. However, I think in Dixie, in PR, if there is, so currently, I believe there is a ranked choice voting. So if I had to guess what would happen in these other states, is I probably won't be the first pick, but I'll almost definitely be the second pick. And if I'm not the second pick, I would put a 99% chance I'm the third pick for these people. And so I think just getting enough delegates from those, from being the second or third pick for the people in those states, it might actually get me to win the primary.
All right. I'm going to go a little off track of my notes here, just because you did mention the growth of the GLP. You talked about the little area of policy that your party is trying to carve out.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand not wanting to go so big tent that you lose sight of that. What I do want to ask is, obviously your party is very highly concentrated in Jefferson right now. I believe we have one or two big names in the north, and then other than that, there's really nothing. Is there a plan to expand your geographic influence, even if you don't move outside of your relatively narrow policy platform?
Oh, yes, 100%. So, It's not like we specifically targeted the North. I mean, sorry, I didn't mean the North. I mean Jefferson.
Yep.
It just so happened that most of the people who had similar ideologies were in the same geographic location, which I think makes sense. So it just so happened most of us were Jeffersonians, and so we're kind of established in Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
However, that doesn't mean we're the party isn't afraid of moving into other states. It, like, due to the circumstances, we just happen to mostly land in Jefferson. I know we do have two pretty good up-and-comer DC counselors who really have, to my knowledge, no, like, they are both registered Jefferson, I believe. Like,
okay.
Jefferson citizens. However, they haven't really done anything in Jefferson or the other states. They're just well known in DC, so we could see them moving to other states.
Mm-hmm. Okay, kind of getting back to the primary process after that little tangent. Part of why we know about the chaos that went on in the left primary so far is your discussion on Twitter regarding the rules of the primary. Now, we talked about it a little bit back and forth on that platform, but since I have you on here, I want to take some time on it. You originally took all of the delegates in Jefferson. I think it's correct. Fair to say that that is the most likely state that you're going to win of those that are left. However, your protests to the system cost you much of that early advantage. Why push for the change to the rules if you're now running a more serious campaign to win more than just a spoiler?
Mostly because what the parties agreed on, there is a specific line that says, and let me look at it, no threshold may exceed 25%. So us candidates did not know what that threshold was going to be. We had no idea. We couldn't affect it. We had no clue.
Okay, just to pause, just so I can clarify, that when you say up to 25%, that is the threshold at which you will start earning delegates.
Correct. That is what that line is referring to. So,
and who had the ability to set that within that range?
I believe it was the primary election board.
Okay. Do we know, or are we allowed to know who's a part of that?
I don't know. Honestly, like, I'm going to be 100% honest here. I don't know if I'm even allowed to say, because I'm a candidate, and I don't really know who is all a part of it because I'm a candidate.
You don't know who's running the election?
Every party at least got one member.
Okay, can
however,
we get that?
Out of the respect to that party member, because I haven't talked to him about it, I'm not going to.
Okay.
Be a 0 to 25% threshold. And generally, thresholds are used before, like pre-2018, to make it so the math when determining delegates came out evenly. It made it easier. However, the election board decided to do a full 25% threshold. Why? I can't really tell you. I don't think anyone will be able to really tell you. And I'm strictly against that. The reason why I was upset about it is because it kind of goes against all the electoral reform I stand for. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand I could have probably made a big fuss about it and they wouldn't have changed it. But that goes against what I stand for. And I know sometimes you might have to sacrifice what you stand for to get an advantage and actually push policy. But I feel like that was such a big, like, thing that I couldn't just let slide.
Okay.
So yeah, that's why I mentioned something on Twitter. It was just, I felt wrong not saying anything. So I decided to say something.
Mm-hmm. Did your campaign, or did the campaigns as a collective agree to these election rules, or was it the parties that make up the coalition?
The parties that make up the coalitions agreed.
Okay. So your campaign was not involved with the rules of the election that you're participating in?
Correct. All the candidates do not have any direct influence on the rules of the election.
Okay. I believe that's all I had to touch on with the primary. I would be remiss if I didn't ask. While we were trying to set up this interview, you mentioned that you had a thing involving global labor just before we were able to get you in studio here. Can I ask what that was, if there's something happening in the party that the public would do well to be aware of?
Sure. I don't see any issue why the public couldn't know about this. We just haven't really made it... We haven't advocated it for the public to know because there also really isn't a need for the public to know, but the GOP has a party caucus where, unlike the SDP and other parties, I'd just like to say, we actually like to make sure that our party members are informed about what's going on in the federal government and in the country as a whole. So we will sit down and just talk about, like, upcoming bills that are going mostly federally, but sometimes state bills. And we'll decide if, as a party, do we support these bills or do we not? Do we want to amend these bills if we have elected positions that are able to? And generally, how we feel about where the country is going. And I feel like this is very effective. Because, like, let's look at what's going on in the House right now. Mm. How many bills have been produced by the SDP members that have had major flaws? A lot of them.
Yes,
or
true.
I would say a lot of them. Some of them. How many of those bills have we seen from GOP members that had major flaws? I can tell you right now it's been zero. And I'd like to attribute that to two things. Mostly, one is the caucusing we do. We make sure that people are, like, educated on bills going on and what to avoid. And second, also in our party, we make sure that people have bill reviews. And, like, we make sure people are actively looking over these bills to make sure there are no, like, major flaws.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is a system that other parties should employ. I know you're part of the Libertarians, and the Libertarians are a bit secretive. Do they do anything like that? If you're, you're the interviewer, but I'm just wondering.
Yeah, there's generally a discussion within the caucus regarding bills that are coming up or bills that are about to be submitted so that elected officials can get their eyes on them. Occasionally that goes out to the broader membership, but I would say it is more commonly within the elected officials.
Cool. The GOP, our system, mostly, it doesn't necessarily mandate elected officials to attend the caucus. It's heavily encouraged, especially myself as the chair of the party.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily have to be there. If I have an emergency, I can let the other council members know, and I don't have to show up. However, most of the time, I'm going to show up because I think it's very imperative that I do. So I want to make sure that any new members who join the party, because we are a growing party, knows what's going on, and I can help them to the best of my ability, or that my other party mates can help them to the best of their ability. So yeah, I think it's a really good system. We haven't really like been super public about it, because it's kind of an internal party affairs thing. Like,
sure.
It's cool to know about, but it's not super relevant to people, because unless you're in the party, you can't really join it.
Mm-hmm. My last question that I have noted for you here is kind of my perennial one for presidential candidates when I get the chance to sit down with them. What do you believe is your biggest obstacle to winning the White House right now?
Oh, the biggest obstacle? Do you want like actual answer, or do you want like a normal answer?
I want whatever answer you are willing to give. Maybe both.
The actual answer is the SDP. Okay. I'll be perfectly honest. I am kind of scared that the SDP here, it's just going to be the hill, and we're going to see an inactive administration. I know I have kind of been an outspoken critic against Hale, but I know I'm not the only one. Mm-hmm. Other people feel this way, and they're just not willing to say it.
Okay.
Publicly. So, like, and again, the SDP, some of the members just seem to support Hale no matter what. I don't think they can be swayed. And with how many people are on the primary, I think that's going to be the biggest issue.
Okay.
I think once whoever wins the primary, like if I were to win, I think I have a pretty fair shot of winning the presidency past that. It's just winning the primary is going to be the biggest issue.
Hmm. Can I ask, and I don't know how far into this you want to go internal strategy-wise, do you believe it is advantageous if you truly feel that you are the best candidate to lead this nation to put yourself in a primary where you believe the largest member of that coalition is going to be dead set against you and put forward someone that you believe is not going to perform the job well, perform as a relatively inactive occupant of the seat? And if a coalition partner is the biggest obstacle to your victory, what is the rationale behind staying in that system?
It's funny you ask this, because just recently I've actually had a private conversation with a friend about, like, the philosophy behind this. And it mostly, I was posed the question, like, this will be relevant, trust me. I was posed the question, if I could decide myself having total control over the country, or letting the people elect whoever they wanted, and it possibly turns out to be someone terrible who will run the country to the ground, what would I do? And I think I've come down to the conclusion, I have to let the people vote. Sure. Democracy cannot be undermined, which is why I'm a part of this primary. I think it's best for all the people who support these left parties to vote on who they want their candidate to be. So okay. Even though I think I am more equipped than at least one of the people in the primary who pose a big threat to my run, it undermines the entire process if I just leave, drop out, and just run against them anyways. Mm-hmm. in the actual election.
So and if Hale wins, you'll support him.
Yes.
Okay.
If the people want him to vote, then I mean, if the people want him to be president, then the people want him to be president.
All right. While I have you in here, anything else you'd like to say to the weekly audience?
I am not really sure. I hope, I'm doing my best to make sure I can get Jefferson to run smoothly. I'm going to try my best in the House. I've got some big bills coming up. If you're interested in joining the GLP, just message me or just talk to me. And that's generally all.
All right. Governor Dallas, thank you again. Good luck out on the virtual trail.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you again to Governor Dallas for taking the time to sit down today. It was a great conversation. I'm hoping to have more as we live toward the November election here. So if you're a candidate seeking any office, particularly the presidency, but I'll talk with anybody. We'll definitely get that set up and have a conversation like this. Remember to subscribe to The Weekly wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss the latest news or any new episodes. The Weekly is a public record podcast.